To their friends and neighbors, Sherry and Michael Daly seem like a loving and devoted couple. However, when Sherry disappears from the parking lot of a local Target, Michael's more interested in the steamy affair he's having with one of his coworkers than he is in helping with the investigation. And when the brutal truth about what happened to Sherry comes out, everyone is shaken to their core at just how depraved some people really are. Hello and welcome to The Dark Side of Love. I'm your host, Bianca Sloan, author of suspense novels about the dark side of love. And this week, I'm putting a spotlight on the case I'm calling, Who Can You Trust? California girl Sherry Renee Guess was born in Lancaster in northern Los Angeles, 14 months after her older brother Scott. Sherry was known for being an outdoorsy girl who loved going to the beach, and her mom, Carlene, described her to Dateline as, quote, a spunky and feisty little girl who adored kids, babies, and animals. The Guess family later moved northwest to Ventura, a coastal city known for its beautiful and pristine beaches, including Surfers Point and San Buenaventura. And it was while she was a student at Ventura High School that Sherry met big man on campus, Michael Daly, otherwise known as Hawaiian Mike, despite the fact he was born and raised in Ventura. So Hawaiian Mike, as he was known, liked to cruise around campus in his black Monte Carlo, and he was considered a cool guy, one of the most popular boys in school. And I have to imagine that a lot of girls had a crush on him, but it was pretty blonde Sherry who catches his eye, and eventually, his heart. According to Sherry's mom, Carlene, she told Dateline that she, meaning Carlene, liked Mike, finding him to be nice and was especially impressed that he respected Sherry's curfew. Mike was so mesmerized by Sherry that when he took her out for her 18th birthday, he brought her 17 roses, and when the clock struck midnight, he brought the final rose to her house. I mean, it's giving bachelor vibes, right? Mike and Sherry sealed the deal in 1982 when they got married. Eventually, they both went to work together at Vond Supermarket, and Sherry, she later left Vond to give birth to the couple's sons, Max and Devin, and eventually she started a new career. Remember, because Sherry loved kids, she decided to open up a daycare out of her house so she could be around kids all the time. So Sherry had this dream, a goal really, that she would be married by 21 and a mom by 24, and she achieved it. So Sherry's got her two little boys, and everyone says she's a totally devoted mom. She's got the perfect career for her and a happy marriage to her high school sweetheart. So in other words, life is wonderful, which means if something can go wrong, it will. May 6th, 1996. It's Monday, and if it's Monday, you would usually find Sherry at the local Target. I fully support this, by the way. Everyone close to Sherry knew that it was her normal Monday morning routine to go to Target, and on this particular Monday, she is buying a Mother's Day gift for her mom for the upcoming holiday. So Sherry, she goes, she does her thing, and then after school, she's supposed to pick up her sons, Max and Devin, except she doesn't show up. Totally out of character for her. And she's nowhere. She's not home. She's not any of the places where she normally would be. Several hours pass, and Mike, her husband, he calls the cops, freaking out that Sherry's missing. He tells the cops that he's called the hospital, he's called highway patrol, thinking, well, maybe she was in an accident or something, but it seems Sherry has vanished without a trace. Mike is told that he has to wait 72 hours to file a missing persons report, and almost immediately, Mike starts saying to his friends and neighbors that he's afraid Sherry has been kidnapped, which is kind of a weird thing to say. Like, who comes up with that, right? Cops, meanwhile, having been informed by Sherry's neighbor that she would have spent the morning at Target, head there, as that would have been the last place that she was likely seen. So when the cops get to the Target, they find Sherry's van, which she used in her daycare, still in the parking lot. The keys were in the ignition, her ID attached to her keys, and the stuff she bought at Target still in the car. It's alarming, to say the least, and this seemingly lends credence to Mike's theory that maybe Sherry was kidnapped. Cops pull the surveillance footage from that day, and they see Sherry on tape buying her items, then leaving the store at around 9:22 a.m. Now, this starts a whole lot of questions churning. Was Sherry being followed? Did she, for whatever bizarre reason, peace out all on her own? Unlikely, because as Sean Conroy, former detective with the Ventura Police Department, says in Wicked Attraction, quote, Sherry Daly had no reason to be missing. There was no reason for her to suddenly disappear. While cops are investigating the scene, searching for clues about what might have happened to Sherry, a witness comes forward and says, as a matter of fact, I saw a woman in a blue Nissan Altima who was very obviously wearing a blonde wig and thick makeup go up to Sherry and arrest her before putting her in the back of the Altima and driving off. Okay, plot twist. So is Sherry Daly arrested? Does that mean that she's in police custody somewhere? Everyone who saw this happen draws the same conclusion that, okay, this woman was arrested in the middle of a Target parking lot. It seems like a logical conclusion. Except there are a few things that don't add up. For one, this police officer was alone, didn't have a partner with her, which is odd because that is not the typical protocol when you're making an arrest. And they were in a Nissan Altima. Because what's weird about that is because most law enforcement officials drive Ford Crown Victorias when they're on the job. So despite all of these oddities, police search their databases and confirm that Sherry was not arrested and therefore not in police custody anywhere. In fact, it seems as though Mike's odd prediction that his wife has been kidnapped has come true. So as word spreads around to neighbors that Sherry is missing, everyone says, you know what? Ventura is not that big. Sherry's got to be out there somewhere. We'll search for her and we'll find her. And so the community comes together to pass out missing person flyers, to hit the streets in search of clues, talk to people, all so they can find out what has happened to Sherry. So Mike does his part, going on TV and giving media interviews, pleading for Sherry's safe return, making the point that his wife would not go along with someone on her own, that something terrible must have happened to her. He and his boys go to Target to pass out missing persons flyers with Sherry's picture. Now watching this, if you didn't know any better, you would think Michael Daly was the epitome of the concerned, distraught husband, frantic to get his wife back. But he was not. Not even close. While everyone thought Mike and Sherry had this amazing, wonderful marriage, the truth is Mike was, excuse my French, a jackal. It was a marriage riddled with Mike's relentless emotional and verbal abuse towards his wife. Sherry's mom, Carlene, told Dateline, quote, hindsight. He's the puppeteer and she was the puppet. Going on to say that her daughter became, quote, a meek, controlled woman. Emotional domestic violence. That's what it was. That's pretty heavy when you think about it. Some of the things that Sherry would have to do for Mike, for one, she would have to get up at 2 a.m. to warm up the shower for him, just wait on him hand and foot. And for her trouble, in return, she would get pelted with insults from her husband. Mike and Sherry's neighbor, Debbie English, told Dateline that Mike would tell Sherry all the time that she was fat, boring, and that he had absolutely no respect for her. He did not like her, much less love her. And it seems as though Mike's sole mission in life is to make his wife feel absolutely worthless. Prince of a guy. And as if all of that was not enough to bear, pretty much from day one of their marriage, Mike has been cheating on Sherry. And in fact, he sleeps with everyone. He mostly keeps his affairs confined to the women that he works with at Vaughn's, it's the supermarket. But he also enjoys his prostitutes, as it turns out. Lots and lots of them, in fact. And another special surprise is that Mike is a big-time druggie. He does drugs, he sells drugs, he does drugs with the prostitutes. He's awful. I don't know of any other way to put it. He's just terrible. Or as my brother and I would say, he's terrible. Absolutely terrible. Because Sherry loved Mike so much, I mean, we've heard this before, it's sad, But because she loved him so much, she had decided to look past her husband's affairs. He was her high school sweetheart, the only man she had ever been with, and she was someone who felt that when you got married, you stayed married. My guess is you probably could not have blasted Sherry away from Mike. And remember, they have two little boys, so she probably felt that she had every reason in the world to stay in the marriage, no matter what. So she lost the weight, she bought new clothes, started wearing makeup, whatever she could do to keep her husband. But at the end of the day, Mike does not love her and he does not respect her. Doesn't matter what she does. As Lila Hankey DeBroth, former chief deputy district attorney, said in Wicked Attraction, Sherry was, quote, a wonderful, wonderful, sweet woman who was very much devoted to her husband and to her family and to her husband, Michael. Lila went on to say that Sherry, quote, would have done absolutely anything in the world for him and anything to keep him and try to make him happy, but that he, meaning Mike, could have cared less about hurting her feelings. So even though Mike is walking around high most of the time, banging his coworkers, picking up prostitutes, there is, it seems, one special girl who has captured his heart. And her name is Diana Hahn. Diana Hahn was born in 1961. When she was a little girl, a basketball backboard fell on her head, and as a result, she suffered a traumatic brain injury. Her family received some settlement money, and Diana eventually made a full recovery, going back to school and even becoming an honor student. At one point, she had aspirations of becoming a model and an actress and took some classes to that effect, eventually making it into the background of a Lindsay Wagner TV movie. You know Lindsay Wagner, Bionic Woman, okay? So this is a pretty big deal, right? So she's in the background of this TV movie with Lindsay Wagner. And if you squint, you still would not see Diana, as it turns out. And the truth is, 35-year-old Diana does not achieve much of anything. And she has no life. She's living off the settlement money that she received from her accident. She's living with her mom, in fact. And she's just kind of drifting through life, running through one dead-end job and one dead-end relationship after another. Until 1993, when she goes to work in the deli department of Vons and she meets Michael Daly. This changes everything for her. As Sean Conroy, who was detective with the, or former detective, with the Ventura Police Department, told Wicked Attraction, quote, I think she had a somewhat mundane life, and he came into her life, and he turned her upside down. By the time that Sherry disappears, Diana and Mike have been having an affair for about 2 years. And Mike, unsurprisingly, he relished taunting Sherry with this knowledge, basically saying, I'm having this affair, and what are you going to do about it? It's an open secret, this affair. And Mike and Diana, who are both part Japanese, feel as though they are soulmates. So in an interesting little twist, one of the detectives assigned to Sherry's case is Detective Matt Harville of the Ventura County Police Department. Turns out that he went to high school with Sherry and Mike, so he has a personal connection to all of this. And as he told Dateline, he asks Mike at one point, point blank, hey, is there anything out there that's going to surprise me? And Mike has to admit, yeah, I've got a girlfriend. So because Mike thinks he's smarter than the cops, he tries to play cute and says, yeah, even though she's my girlfriend who I work with, I don't know her last name. Couldn't tell you where she lives. I don't actually know anything about her. But I'll give you her phone number. Okay, Mike. Well, again, Mike, not that smart, because he clearly does not realize that the cops don't need him to tell them Diana's address because they can look it up from her phone number, which is exactly what they do. They pay her a visit, and for one, she answers the door in her lingerie, as one does, and two, she's got these massive red scratches on her forehead and her face, it's all red and blotchy like she's been in a fight. And plot twist, Mike is also there. Again, not that surprising, right? I guess maybe he got her address out of the phone book. Because remember, he doesn't know. I don't know where she lives. I don't know anything. Anyway. So now remember that his wife is missing. And this is a time way before cell phones, which means he should be home waiting by the phone for word about Sherry. No, instead, he's hanging out with Diana in her scratched-up forehead and her lingerie. Now, Diana does not have a criminal record, but oddly enough, one of her friends, who I guess knew about the affair that Diana was having with Mike and therefore knew that Sherry was missing, had alerted the cops that she saw Diana with some scratches on her forehead the day after Sherry vanished. Now, I have to laugh because it's funny, and I like laughing at funny things. Diana's story about how she got these scratches. So the way she tells it to the cops is that the day that Sherry disappeared, she took a bike ride to go sunbathing somewhere, and that she's on the road on this bike, on her bicycle, when out of nowhere, these guys in a big black truck start whistling at her, and she gets distracted, which causes her to run off the road and fall off the bike. But the only injury is to her forehead. What? Now, as ridiculous as this story is, and it is stupid, let's just be clear, the cops are obliged to check out Diana's alibi. But as Detective Conroy told Wicked Attraction, quote, "How can we check on someone who's out on a bicycle ride?" It's kind of like if you say, if you're asked, "Okay, what did you do that night?" "Well, I was home all night watching TV." Well, the TV can't corroborate that alibi. So that's it's a tough one. It's a tough one. Diana also admits that she and Sherry have had some confrontations. So now we know that the two women know each other. And since Sherry knows Diana, she knows what she looks like. So if it were Diana in that parking lot at Target that day, why would Sherry go off with someone she's met a bunch of times before, someone she was well acquainted with? Was Diana's disguise just that good, or is there another woman involved? Because remember, Mike's got plenty on his roster. Some of Sherry's friends and neighbors consider that maybe Sherry did leave on her own. Debbie English told Dateline that Sherry had told her she might just take off for a few days to give Mike a taste of his own medicine. Other friends thought that Sherry might have been the one to attack Diana because she knew that Diana wanted her life. And in Sherry's mind, Diana was the bad guy. Mike was the innocent husband fallen into this awful woman's clutches. And as Sherry's friend Kristen Best told Dateline, in Sherry's mind, quote, "If Diana would go away, everything would go back to normal." So it's kind of seeming like maybe Sherry's set Diana up or set Michael up, or I don't know, but something's not right. Something's not right. Cops turn their attention to tracking down the Nissan Altima that the witnesses say they saw Sherry being put into at the Target that day. And they visit every car rental place in town in search of a lead. They finally get a break when they examine the records of a budget rental counter and learn that a blue-green Nissan Altima had been rented out during the time of Sherry's disappearance, but that when the car came back, it was severely damaged. So even though the car had already been repaired, rental records showed that the inside rearview mirror was broken off, suggesting a fight had happened inside the car. There was blood soaked into the seats, and they found blonde hairs, but they were not Sherry's. They were from a wig. So cops realize this is a crime scene. And three guesses who rented this car. If you guessed Diana Hahn, you would have guessed correct. Mike, as it turns out, has an airtight alibi for Sherry's disappearance as he was at work at Vons stocking shelves. But Diana's whereabouts, obviously, hell of a lot sketchier, so the cops now need to bring her in for questioning. She, of course, denies knowing anything about where Sherry is, says that she was a vegetarian, so she couldn't have had anything to do with Sherry's disappearance. I guess she was trying to say she had sanctity for life and that's what she believes, and I don't know. But at any rate, she did say to cops that she and Mike think that Sherry has run off and left poor, pitiful Mike with the kids and all the bills. Sure, Jan. Now, this is where things start to get weird. I mean, they're already weird, but they're getting weirder. It's getting weirder. Cops take a look through Diana's purse and they find a family photo of Mike and Diana with his two kids. And it's a Christmas photo. And they ask her, what are you doing with a picture of Mike and his sons in a Christmas photo? Because what kind of a woman would do this? And her response is, it's Christmas Eve. Like, why wouldn't I be in a picture with my boyfriend and his two kids who's married? So now a motive starts to take shape. And it's more than just, oh, I want the wife out of the way because I want the husband. No, Diana wants Sherry's life, period, point blank. The house, the husband, and the kids. As Detective Harville tells Dateline, quote, that's realizing her dream. That's the life she wanted. Cops keep digging into the relationship between Mike and Diana and learn just some fakakta, I mean truly fakakta stuff about the two of them. So in addition to the Christmas photo of Diana, Mike, and the two kids, which is bananas, Diana also gave Mike a silk-screened pillow of herself that Mike keeps on the bed that he shares with Sherry. And he refuses to let her take that pillow off of their bed, which is just another way to torture his wife. Because remember, he calls her names. He says, you know, she's boring and all this other stuff. So here, let me tighten the screws just a little bit more. Diana would also call the house for Mike, pretending to be this guy named Alex. Like, she was pretending to be this friend of Mike's named Alex. And it was to get him out of the house, basically. Because, you know, and it wasn't that hard for her to pull something like that off, because remember, she wanted to be an actress. She's taking classes. And it works. Mike then says, oh, I got to go hang out with Alex for a few days. And, you know, what's Sherry going to say? And then a total what the F was when Mike took the boys to spend Christmas Day with Diana. I mean, that's just an effing record scratch. As Lila Henke DeBroth says in Wicked Attraction, Mike, quote, really saw this as two separate families. And in fact, Mike had actually moved in with Diana at one point and was essentially supporting two households. He doesn't actually tell Sherry that he's moved in with Diana. He just tells her that he wants a trial separation. He would even come over to pick up his sons under the guise, I guess, of spending time with him, and then they'd all be spending time with Diana, like on Christmas Day, which is just, that's terrible. What a terrible effing thing to do to your wife, to your family. But Mike doesn't care. Mike does not care. And over time, this shell game of living with the two women, it's not sustainable. And after a few months, Mike is broke. He makes Diana move in with her mom while he is forced to move back in with Sherry full time. Which poor Sherry, she probably thinks she's getting her husband back, that she's won the war. But no, it's just economical reasons. Because, again, he does not love his wife and he does not want things to work out between them. Well, this new living arrangement is wholly unacceptable to Diana, and she starts pressing him to make a decision. It's her or it's me. To get her off his back, Mike tells Diana that he is going to divorce Sherry, but Mike does not want to divorce Sherry. He, in fact, wants Sherry dead. And so, he decides to manipulate the lovesick, easily malleable Diana Hahn into taking care of his so-called problem. As Larry English, Mike and Sherry's neighbor, told Dateline, Diana was, quote, used as a pawn, and he, meaning Mike, wanted her to do his dirty work. Once it was done, he would pretty much be free and clear. Cops continue to try and get Diana to flip on Mike, calling her desperate, saying she's nothing more to a toy than a toy to Mike, likening her to a jet ski, with Detective Conroy saying to her during the interrogation, quote, Diana is something to be taken out, played with, put away, and left until he's ready to come play again. Ouch. Diana, unsurprisingly, does not see it that way, claiming, quote, but he takes care of me. Despite how hard the cops press to get Diana to confess her involvement in Sherry's disappearance, they are unable to get her to crack, and they have to let her go. Well, it seems like Diana is getting away with something. She is about to be busted big time. So the day that cops release Diana, there is a ton of media outside the police station, and someone sees Diana on the news. and recognizes her from when she was shopping at a local wig store. Because remember how cops found blonde hairs from a wig in that Altima? They also discover that same store sold Diana a badge and handcuffs. Because remember, everyone thought who saw what was happening thought that Sherry was being arrested by a female police officer. And how did Diana pay for these items? With a personal check. A personal check. Jackpot. Police keep following the money trail and learn that Diana went to Kmart and bought a blazer, sunglasses, an axe, crazy glue, lighter fluid, windproof matches, I didn't even know that was a thing, and plastic bags. This is basically a murder kit. And again, how did Diana pay for all these things? With a personal check. That she signed with a green ink pen, by the way. Like, I did that when I was in high school. I used to have purple ink pens, and I don't do that anymore. It had never made any sense that Sherry would have gone off with Diana because she knew her. But remember that Diana had taken modeling and acting classes and was probably better than the average person at disguising herself, you know, pretty well. And she disguised herself well enough that Sherry would not have recognized her. Couple that with Sherry seeing Diana out of context. And I mean, frankly, I think this could have happened to any one of us, to be honest. And while all of this is damning, it's not enough. To have any hope of putting Diana in jail and keep her there, police have to find Sherry. Finally, on June 1st, about 4 weeks after Sherry disappeared, her friend Kristen Best was out with the search party that found Sherry's body in the rough, hilly terrain of Ventura County. It started with spotting her sunglasses on the side of the road, then a pair of black shorts that Kristen immediately identified as belonging to Sherry. She had been beaten, stabbed, and decapitated with an axe. It was an absolutely inhumane and brutal way to die. Sherry Daly was 35 years old. Diana is charged and arrested, but at that point she was the only one because, again, Mike had an indisputable alibi. He was working. And he denies any involvement with Sherry's murder, insisting that Diana acted alone. Police speculate that Mike had told Diana that Sherry would always go to Target on Monday, so they chose Monday, May 6, 1996, as the day. So Diana in her disguise, this is the theory, that Diana in her disguise, she rolls up to Sherry, who doesn't recognize her, and that what likely happened is that Diana flashed this fake badge that she had, you know, she got from the wig store, and probably told Sherry that her husband had been arrested because drugs had been found at the house. And, you know, this has a ring of truth because Sherry knows her husband's a drug addict. And Sherry, she would have complied. She's a nice lady. You know, doesn't want to be in trouble, doesn't want to cause trouble. She would have gone along with it. Police believe that too late, Sherry figured out she was in the car with Diana and that she fought for her life. Detective Conroy, Sean Conroy, told Dateline that it was, quote, a hellacious fight. By the time that Altima pulled out of that Target parking lot, Sherry was either already dead or close to it. Diana drove about 15, 20 minutes to the nearby mountains and dumped Sherry's body into a ravine. At the time that Diana was arrested, there's not enough evidence to arrest Mike. Now, while he displays all of the typical signs of the husband who has something to do with his wife's murder, being a jerk is not enough reason to issue an arrest warrant. For example, let's count all the ways that Mike was a jerk. When Sherry was missing, Mike would tote his two boys over to Target where the kids would pass out flyers with their mom's picture while Mike just stood there doing nothing. Didn't talk to people, didn't pass out a stack himself. Just kind of stood there like, oh, here I am at Target. What's happening? Rather than join the search, because remember there were search parties of friends and neighbors and, you know, other concerned citizens out looking for Sherry, Mike went to Dana Point, which is basically a beach community, and he went jet skiing. He gave away all of Sherry's clothes. This is the same thing Scott Peterson did with Lacey, like sold her car, gave away her stuff. And Mike even files for legal separation because, again, remember, he and Diana were trying to sell this story of, oh, Sherry ran off and left me with the kids and the bills. And so I guess he thought filing legal separation, I don't know what he thought. He probably doesn't even know what he was thinking. As Detective Sean Conroy says in Wicked Attraction, quote, he is not acting like a distraught husband at all. At one point, after Sherry disappeared but before her body was found, Mike took one of his prostitutes up to the exact spot where she would eventually be found so he could have sex and get coked out. And as Lena DeBroff aptly noted in Wicked Attraction, it was like Mike was saying, quote, in your face, Sherry Daly. And like he just does not care. He just does not care. Lena went on to say in that same show, Wicked Attraction, that Mike, quote, didn't even make any effort to show that he was sad or worried or concerned at all. He would walk around in the community and he would have a grin on his face. He had no concern whatsoever. Mike was so consumed with rage towards Sherry. He wanted her to suffer. He wanted her tortured. He wanted her humiliated. It's beyond disturbing, frankly, this hatred that he has for her. And after Sherry's found, Sherry's mom, Carlene, says in Dateline that her son-in-law strolled in late to her daughter's memorial service and that he, quote, just swaggered on in and sat down. So, as I said, Mike's a prick at minimum, and in their gut, at the most, they know he had something to do with it, but they just can't prove it. So yet again, it looks as though Mike is going to wiggle off the hook. Oh, but wait. Remember all of these extra girlfriends that he's got hanging around? Well, one of them comes forward and says that Mike was obsessed with finding someone to manipulate into murdering Sherry in almost the exact way that Sherry was killed. However, he wasn't able to find a dupe until Diana. Police learned that Sherry had written Mike a letter demanding that he start rehab for his raging drug habit or she was going to file for divorce. Sad to say, Sherry probably thought that this was going to be a wake-up call for Mike, but guys like Mike, they don't want ultimatums. They don't want to wake up. They like where they are. They definitely don't want to go through the expense or the messiness of divorce, but they somehow land on the solution as being murder. So Mike and Diana, they decide, you know what, that's the solution we're going for. We're going to do it. So they say, you know what, today's the day. Sherry's got to go. And Diana fell in line. She did exactly what Mike wanted her to do. So, and no judgment when I say this, but it is kind of important to the story, but Diana was into witchcraft and the occult. And turns out so was Mike. So this was yet something else that was bonding them together. And so Mike's birthday was coming up around the time of Sherry's murder. So Diana, for his birthday, decides to offer him a human sacrifice in the form of Sherry Daly. I mean, what happened to giving people a toaster or a tie? I'm going to murder your wife? Happy birthday? Boggles. Turns out, phone records show that the whole time Diana was taking Sherry to the mountains, she's stopping along the way and calling Mike to update him. Because remember, 1996, we're still using payphones. So he knows exactly what is going on. So this whole, defense that he has that, oh, Diana did it on her own. No dice. Mike probably thought, which is what a lot of master manipulators think, that his hands will be clean because he didn't actually commit the murder. But it doesn't matter because as far as the law is concerned, if you conspire in any way to end someone's life, you are just as guilty as the person who actually did it. Finally, 6 months after Sherry's murder, police have their evidence and Mike is arrested. Diana goes on trial in 1997, and she blames it all on Mike. He's the one who picked up the car, and yes, she saw the blood in the rental car, but she had no idea what it was. I don't know what it is. She also thinks Mike set her up and was probably planning this from the start. Duh, sure was. Nobody is buying Diana's defense, and she is found guilty. Life, no parole. 6 months later, it's Mike's turn up to bat, and despite the evidence tying him to the murder, showing that he conspired with Diana to murder his wife, he admits to nothing, saying that the only thing he was guilty of was being in love with two women. Ventura County Deputy District Attorney Mike Frawley, who prosecuted the case, said in Wicked Attraction, quote, "The label puppet master fit Michael Daly perfectly because he proved himself to be a master manipulator. He got Diana Hahn to do everything that he wanted her to do and do it just the way he wanted it done." In a jailhouse interview with a local TV station, because Mike is so despicable and a total monster, he said about Diana and Sherry, quote, "They hated each other. They both wanted me." And that's, at the end of the day, that's all he cares about. As Mike Frawley said so succinctly in Wicked Attraction, quote, "He was interested in one person in this world, and it was just Michael Daly." Accurate. Like Diana, nobody was buying what Mike was selling, and he was also sentenced to life in prison, no parole. Mike's parents raise his and Sherry's sons, and the two boys support their dad and 100% believe that he is innocent. Sherry's family testified during Mike's trial and expressed sorrow over their daughter marrying the man who would eventually murder her. Her father, Ken Guest, told the jury, quote, "I walked her down the aisle. I gave her to someone who said he was going to love and cherish her. I regret that because he didn't." Prosecutor Mike Frawley put it more bluntly in Wicked Attraction, saying, quote, "I'm hyper aware of the Michael Dalys out there. They're very scary people." Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of The Dark Side of Love. I'm your host, Bianca Sloan, and show your love for The Dark Side of Love by visiting thedarksideoflove.com for show notes and transcripts. While you're there, sign up for my newsletter to be notified about new episodes, and you can also find a link to my Patreon page where you can access bonus material and other fun stuff. Learn more about my suspense novels about The Dark Side of Love by visiting biancasloan.com. Thanks for hanging out with me, and join me next time for another tale of love gone wrong. I'll see you on the dark side.